Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35,
30. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Zion.
Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Joined by Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk. 1 hour of Giants talk with you on the phones or on Twitter. Chime in, jump in, we'll talk some football. The Giants are playing the San Francisco 49ers on Sunday Night Football. We move on to that tonight as the Giants try to go over 500 for the first time in quite a while. And a big game against the 49ers. The Giants also made a big announcement. And I guess we'll hit this first, Lance. They are inducting some new people into the Ring of Honor. Two names that Giant fans are certainly familiar with. And two that maybe are mysteries to them. So we'll go through the three names right now. First, you have Chris Snee. Obviously, the Giants know about his great Giants history, what he did on the offensive line, all the Pro Bowls, a big contributor, a couple of Super Bowls. And then one of the guys that anchored the defensive line for two of those Super Bowls, that's Osiu Manura. Obviously, one of the best pass rushers in team history. I'll get to the other two guys in a second, but Lance, first, your take on the two contemporary new members of the Giants Ring of Honor.
Well, you just hit it right on the nose, John. You mentioned that these are two key pieces of the battle in the trenches for the Giants over a very long period of time. Chris Snee was part of that offensive line that was arguably one of the best, not just in Giants history, but, you know, within that period of time in the NFL. And once that group slowly retired, obviously it took some time for the Giants to get back to that level. So I think it goes without saying Chris Snee's made a tremendous impact on this franchise. And Osiu Manura just retired with the Giants. So it's right around the corner that now he's going to have his name inducted into the Ring of Honor. Certainly an opportunistic player. A lot of big game-changing type of plays. I remember O.C. Moore for that 2011 season, John, when he gets back to full health. All of a sudden, the defense starts to click. They get in the postseason. They beat the Jets. They beat the Cowboys, and they ride that all the way to the Super Bowl. I mean, that's one of the moments that certainly stands out in Osiu Manura's career. But, I mean, each of these players has a tremendous amount of accolades and certainly has made a true impact on this franchise. So I'm not surprised that both of them are going into the Ring of Honor.
All right, then you have John Johnson. Johnson joined the team as an athletic trainer in 1948. He retired at age 90 following the 2007 season, ending a remarkable 60-year career with the franchise. Only Wellington Mara, whose tenure with the organization began in its first season in 1925, had a longer career. Johnson was on the Giants' sideline for 874 regular season games and 34 postseason games. He worked with 12 head coaches. He's still with us at 98 years old. The only guy that has been at more Giant games, I think, is Paul Dottino, all jokes aside. And he's just been a big part of the organization. It's great to recognize somebody that's been such a big contributor to the team off the field.
Well, that's why I joked with you before the show. I said, I don't know who knows more about the Giants, him or Paul Dottino, considering they've been around the franchise for so long. But it's certainly nice for the Giants to go back into the historical archives and honor players that are obviously still with us and also have made a true impact dating back to, I mean, we're talking about the late 40s here with respect to a guy like John Johnson.
And then finally, Jack Lummis, his Giants career consisted of just 9 games in 1941. On January 30th, 1942, obviously the Giants are fully engaged, fully engaged in World War II at that time. He enlisted in the Marines. He wrote a letter to Jack Mara, and I'll read the letter. I just think it's really interesting. This is the letter. Dear Jack, I received your letter of March 11th with the playoff check enclosed. The Giants had made the playoffs the prior season, and players got additional money for the playoffs. I joined the Marines about 7 weeks ago and have just now completed my preliminary training here in San Diego. I'm due to be transferred sometime this week. Destination unknown. I would like to take this opportunity to tell you how much I enjoyed playing with the Giants and thank Duke, that's of course Wellington Mara, and Mr. Mara and Coach Owen for everything. I'll never forget my rookie year with the Giants. Best of luck this coming season. Yours truly, Jack Lummis. And 3 years later, really close to the war being won, on March 8th, 1945, Lummis was mortally wounded on Iwo Jima when he stepped on a landmine and lost his legs. On Sunday, he will join Al Blozis as Giant players who gave their lives in World War II and will be memorialized in the Ring of Honor. And he was killed in January 1945. So, obviously, another war hero. He was received the Medal of Honor on May 5th, 1946 from Harry Truman after his death. and his legacy endures. So the Giants, certainly big supporters of the United States military, and they're honoring somebody that gave their life for the cause and was a member of the Giants for just one short season.
Well, and John, I think it also says a lot about the history of this organization and the history of this franchise, and that's what the Giants stand for. If you think about the other franchises that have been around for so long, the Packers, the Steelers, you know, there's a rich tradition.
The Bears.
Correct, that is tied into this organization, and you know, the Giants certainly do everything they can to recognize players who may not be household names, but certainly, you know, they made a true impact, not just on the football field, but those two players that you read their bios about, certainly the impact that they made as members of the armed forces, gave their lives and so forth, a truly notable dissertation on each one of them that you can certainly read on Giants.com, and it'll be nice to see them be honored in the Ring of Honor at some point this season.
No question about it. 201-939-4513. The Giants, of course, move on to the 49ers. And Lance, take a look at the Niners here. They've struggled this year. They won that first game of the year against the Vikings. But once that game was completed, they've had some issues. They played a lot better against the Packers this past week, hanging in that game. They had struggles offensively, but did a pretty good job limiting the Packers' usual explosive offense.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers and company did not go off. You would have thought that they would light up the scoreboard. San Francisco has had issues on the defensive side of the ball, and they've also had issues on the offensive side of the ball. I think the offense is probably the most concerning aspect of the San Francisco 49ers team right now, John, mainly because of the fact that, you know, Colin Kaepernick has struggled to protect the football. He has 5 interceptions on the season. He had 4 against the Arizona Cardinals. He also has had 3 fumbles on the season, one in which he's lost. So you take that into consideration, and you look at how opportunistic this Giants defense has been over the first 4 games. It's a nice juicy matchup on paper for the Giants. The other issue that the Niners have had on offense, in addition to Colin Kaepernick not protecting the football, you know, outside of that first game against the Minnesota Vikings when Carlos Hyde ran for 168 yards, you know, their running game totals have diminished since then. So that has been a problem. I mean, he's had 51 yards or less in each of the next 3 games. And part of that is the inconsistency of the offensive line for the San Francisco 49ers. They've surrendered 14 sacks over the first 4 games. That's the second most in the National Football League. They have a completely new right side of that offensive line. They've brought in some new pieces. You know, one was brought in from the New England Patriots, Devy, and the other one, Pierce, is a veteran who's been with the Buffalo Bills. And then what they did was Alex Boone, who played on the right side at the right guard spot last season, he moved over to the left side. So it really, John, has been a game of musical chairs. You know, that's my favorite term.
It is your favorite term.
There are other teams that adopt the game of musical chairs. It's not necessarily here in New York or New Jersey. And I think that's taken a toll on this Niners offense because, as you know, it goes without saying, that's going to impact the quarterback. It's also going to impact the running game. And I think we've seen that over the first 4 games with respect to the Niners.
Yeah, and Carlos Hyde had that monster game in that first week against Minnesota, but the last few weeks he just simply hasn't been able to get going. Of course, it hasn't helped either, Lance, that the Niners have gone behind in a lot of these games, and you know, once you get behind big, it's hard to run the football with any sort of consistency, which is a big issue. Offensively for the Niners, just to go through some numbers for you guys out there, and we'll go through some Giants news too as we move along here before we get to your calls. But right now the 49ers are 31st in the NFL in terms of yards per game, 32nd in the NFL in terms of passing yards per game, 31st in the NFL in terms of interception rate, 29th in the NFL in terms of sacks per pass attempt. These numbers are just brutal. Their red zone percentage is tied for 29th, 19th in time of possession, last in the NFL in terms of points per game offensively. And the big thing that they talked about, Lance, was with Greg Roman moving on and, you know, leaving the 49ers, that they wouldn't try to, you know, fit a square peg into the round hole, that they would try to, you know, tailor their offense around Colin Kaepernick's strengths. So far this year, and I don't mean to sound forceful here, but it's been an unmitigated failure. I mean, it's been a mess.
Well, Tom Sula spoke to the media yesterday, John. I was actually watching his press conference online, and he was running out of answers to all the questions that the media was throwing his way. I mean, they basically say that they're in the evaluation period, but they've been saying that each and every week. Now, Kaepernick has struggled in terms of protecting the football, so when you don't protect the football, that obviously is going to impact the offense and how it orchestrates itself, whether it be through the air and on the ground. But what's been surprising, John, you know, you mentioned Greg Roman, who the Giants just went up against. He's now the Buffalo Bills offensive coordinator. the individual that replaced Greg Roman was on staff last year for the Niners. So it wasn't as if they said, okay, hey, we're bringing in a completely brand-new offense, a brand-new staff. Geep Christ was the quarterback's coach. So he worked closely with Colin Kaepernick more so than anybody else on the Niners staff. He's now the offensive coordinator. So that has been a surprise. You would have thought, hey, if there's somebody that knows Colin Kaepernick backwards and forwards, it's certainly his quarterback coach. But the transition has certainly not been as smooth as they anticipated.
And he has weapons. I mean, you mentioned the issues in the offensive line, and we'll get to the defense in a second. But look, Anquan Boldin's still a very, very trusty possession receiver that you know where he's going to be. He'll fight for the football. He's a guy you can go to in a tough spot. Torrey Smith is exactly what he is. He's a guy that's going to be a deep threat down the field, has home run speed, can make catches. And Colin Kaepernick loves throwing it down the field. He loves throwing it deep. So it's a great fit for him. You still have Vernon Davis there, though he's a little banged up. Garrett Celek, the brother to Brent Celek, has actually stepped up and done a pretty good job this year with 11 catches. And I mentioned Carlos Hyde out of the backfield. So there are no lack of weapons outside, Lance. They seem to have the ingredients. They just haven't been able to put the recipe together yet.
Well, but, you know, I'll use the Detroit Lions as an example. And I don't know if it's the best parallel to the San Francisco 49ers, but notice Matthew Stafford's having protection issues, John.
Oh, absolutely.
So those weapons, as a result, are not producing at the levels that we've seen in previous years. I think San Francisco's in a similar spot. You know, you mentioned, yes, he's surrounded by talent. You have the vertical threat in Torrey Smith, Bolden the possession receiver. Reggie Bush, let's not forget, too, is a complimentary running back. He just returned from a calf injury. But the problem is, if the offensive line doesn't give Colin Kaepernick an opportunity to scan the rest of the field, you're not going to be able to produce down the field.
Well, I think some of those sacks, too, and you mentioned the sack numbers, I think a lot of that comes
holding
from
on to the ball a little
Kaepernick
too long.
I will agree with that. Scrambling,
yeah.
Trying to make something happen. And, you know, sometimes these running quarterbacks will run themselves into sacks. I mean, last week Tyrod Taylor got sacked a couple times. A lot of those was because if he was trying to
hold
you know,
on to
create
the ball
time,
so
he
forth.
Ran out of bounds on scrambles, things like that. So, you know, when you take a look at it that way, you know, you wonder how much of it is the offensive line. But clearly there's been so much personnel turnover between the retirements and the injuries and Aldon Smith's off the field problems. And offensively, if you look at Pro Football Focus's numbers, Marcus Martin, I believe, was a second-round pick at center for them. I think the same year Weston Richburg got drafted, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, let's see. Martin came in.
When did
in
Martin
terms
come in?
Of their offensive line. He was their third-round pick last year out of USC.
Third-round pick last year. Okay, so Richburg was the year before that. And he was supposed to be one of the better centers in the draft last year. Pro Football Focus has graded him as one of the worst centers in football so far. Eric Pears, who's taken over at right tackle, he struggled. Jordan Devy, who's their left guard, has struggled. Joe Staley and Alex Boone are really the only two guys that have graded positively for Pro Football Focus. And, you know, the run blocking and pass blocking have been almost equally bad. So if you take a look at it from that perspective, you're right. Pro Football Focus does not like the performance so far of the offensive line.
Well, and remember, Martin, who you referenced, last year he came off a promising rookie campaign because Daniel Kilgore, their starting center,
right.
broke his leg in Week 7, which was actually right before the Giants and the Niners met last season in Week 11. Martin took over, stabilized at least that aspect of the offensive line. You know, now this is year two where he's actually started from the beginning of the season. You know, he's not watching from the sideline anymore. That's certainly a different taste. You know, Staley is a proven Pro Bowler. Boone has been a big part of this offensive line. The right side, you've got a veteran presence, John, but remember, you brought in new names who are now playing next to a second-year center. Sometimes that takes time, not just training camp, for everybody to get on the same page.
All right, quickly on the defense here, folks, before we get to your calls at 201-939-4513, I mean, you look at these numbers, and they've just struggled mightily, and the once mighty San Francisco defense is, you know, like going to the ruins of Pompeii. In Italy, you got, like, the statue of Patrick Willis. You got the statue of Aldon Smith. You got the statue of
a lot of history lessons today between
the
World
other Smith
Wars
on the defensive
and,
line.
Yeah.
And, boy, there's just not a lot of bodies left. Navarro Bowman's, like, the last man standing on, you know, one leg coming off that ACL injury.
He's having a good season, though.
He's having a pretty good season, but they don't have that pass rusher anymore. Ahmad Brooks is probably their best pass rusher running off outside linebacker. And they just don't have guys that scare you. Eric Armstead was their high draft pick this year. He hasn't stepped in and done much yet. Their secondary was never really a strength, but their front seven really helped that secondary out. But now without that, they're getting exposed a little bit, Lance. So they just really haven't been able to find any answers on either side.
I like their linebackers as a group. I would agree with you, John. I mean, they're not necessarily putting up the numbers that they did in previous years, and I think a lot of that is because of the turnaround
with
the secondary and so forth.
They are Chris Borland and Patrick Willis.
They are it, but remember, but keep this in mind. You know, and this is where I think people blow things out of proportion. I'm not here to defend the Niners' defense. I mean, the numbers are what they are. But remember, Patrick Willis missed the majority of last season, John. So they had plenty of experience playing without him.
But the Niners started to decline last year, but they had Borland step in for Willis.
They did, but Michael Wilhoit also stepped in, and he's very much back in the mix. Aaron Lynch, who was a draft pick last year, the fifth rounder, he got starting experience last year. He leads the team with 3 sacks this season. He's back in the mix. Ahmad Brooks had a down season last year. I think he's bounced back to a certain degree, still a small sample size. And Navarro Bowman was sidelined all of last season. He had the torn ACL and the MCL. So, you know, they've got some depth there. They've got some options. The problem is, you know, what is your front three doing? Not very productive. And then the secondary that you referenced, you've got 2 safeties returning, but you have 2 brand-new corners, one who is a brand-new kid, essentially, just
correct,
out of college.
Well, I will bring us back to history. To me, like, 2012-2013, that was like the peak of the Roman Empire. That was like Julius Caesar and Caesar Augustus, and you're conquering the Mediterranean, you're rolling your armies all over the place, and you're having a little bit of fun. Last year, you kind of had the problem where the Roman Empire split you. The one capital in like Constantinople, the other one in Rome, and things weren't going too well.
I hope you're all following at home, by the way. Anyway.
And everything started to decline. You saw it. This is the year where you have all the people that you conquered during the glory days coming back and sacking your cities. And that's what's happening, I think, to the 49ers where, look, that's how the NFL goes. It's cyclical. Teams hit their peak. Yeah. They play really well. And then they start to fall back. And I think that's what you're seeing with the 49ers. Now they're going through a period where a lot of their great players either retired or are hurt or they left via free agency. And they haven't been able to restock those players yet with the draft. Remember, the Niners did a great job drafting defensive players for a long time. But when you start picking later in the first round, it gets a little bit more difficult to do that. So we'll see if they can rebuild quickly and get this defense back together. 201-939-4513.
I was just going to also throw out, we should mention, you know, Vic Fangio, who was the defensive coordinator during that tenure that you were talking about. He's now the Bears' defensive coordinator, so a familiar name to New York City. Eric Mangini, former Jets and Browns head coach, is now the defensive coordinator, but they have the same alignment. They didn't change. They're still running a 3-4 defense, and they have similar personnel, so the scheme hasn't drastically changed, but you still have a new defensive coordinator. He likes to put his stamp on this defense, so I'm sure they're going to have some different looks than what they showed the Giants back in last season's matchup here at MetLife Stadium.
And then just having a different guy organizing things and having a different voice in the room, that's obviously a big factor there as well. One thing with the Giants before we get to your calls at 201-939-4513. The Giants have placed tight end Daniel Fells on injured reserve. They announced that yesterday. Fells was being treated for a chronic ankle condition, and during the evaluation process, it was discovered that he had a staph infection, which requires treatment. Obviously, if you guys have heard about staph infections, they are pretty serious, so the Giants have placed them on IR. And now, Lance, the Giants, who were basically down to one tight end last week until they added Will Tye off of the practice squad, now they're sitting there with Donnell, Tye, and we'll see if Cunningham can get healthy enough to play this week. And I'm sure they'll take a look around the league, see what they can find at tight end to bring in some reinforcements. At the very least, add somebody to the practice squad to give you somebody on that practice squad to supplement the 3 guys that are active right now. But the Giants lose their best blocking tight end, and I would imagine that's going to be the attribute they're looking for whomever they end up bringing in.
Well, you hit it right on the nose, John. I mean, the fact that you lose the guy who was so consistent in terms of blocking and gave you some flexibility so that you could put 2 tight ends in. What we did see in the last game, John, in order for them to counter the loss of Daniel Fells blocking, Bobby Hart came in as that extra offensive lineman. So I'm sure the Giants are going to continue to implement that type of a strategy. But I would agree with you. I think probably likely to see maybe somebody added to the practice squad, similar to a Will Tye, who can at least learn the system. And then in the event of an emergency, an injury, you can at least promote them to the active roster at the last second. You know, Tye got playing time. He had a key drop, which prevented the Giants from continuing a drive. Remember, this was his first regular season game. The good news is he at least knows the system. He's not coming off the street and now all of a sudden has to adapt to this game.
All right, let's get to the calls at 201-939-4513. We'll take your calls the rest of the way. We got to review Fiegel's picks. Fans, don't forget that Big Blue. Let me try that again. Don't forget that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. My My friends call it Big Blue Kickoff Live. It's okay. The daily fantasy sports destination at DraftKings. You can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to play for free today.
I should mention real quickly, John, Jeff tried to review his own picks yesterday, but I stopped him, and I said, we're going to have some fun at his expense.
Oh.
So you should at least know that. He wasn't too happy with his selections.
This is what you call a bloodbath.
See, he knew. He anticipated that. So I gave him the option to prevent himself from putting himself in an embarrassing spot yesterday.
So now we'll just embarrass
him
today.
Exactly. Absolutely. We'll have fun at his
expense. I much prefer that anyway.
I agree.
Let's start on line two and go to JC in Phoenix first. JC, what's going on, pal?
Hey, how you doing, John?
What's up, JC? How are you?
Pretty good. Lance, I've talked to Lance one time before. It's the first time that I talked to you, John, so good talking to you, man.
Hey, thanks for
how
calling.
How long have you guys been doing this show?
Oh, boy, Big Blue Kickoff. If you want to go back to its original form, which was, Big Blue Show on Thursdays, probably back to 2008, 2009, but this show in its current form is probably about 3 years old, three, 4 years old.
Okay. Yeah,
well, we did it without video
for
quite some time, too.
Yeah, I don't call often, but I know all the callers, Shakes, Charlie, you know, everyone. So today I just wanted to maybe ask two things and throw out a couple of comments, to Shakes and Charlie. You guys remember when Shakes first called that first week when we played against Dallas? He was, oh, I'm so scared about this game. We're going to poo-poo this. And we're not
I love the use of the terminology, too,
and,
JC.
We are entitled to our opinion, but I just wanted to kind of call him out because, you know, he's been scared all season. And I was hoping to hear – I heard him yesterday when he called in. I was hoping to see something.
Yes.
Our team looks good, something positive. Even with our linebackers, man, I'm very, very impressed, with Spags and what he's done with our linebackers, Devon Kennard, Waniunga. I mean, we're just playing lights out, man. Probably a little bit better than Curry. Remember when Shakes wanted Curry?
Oh, man. You're,
boy,
you are
really
killing
giving it
Shakes
to him.
Here, JC.
JC, this is some phenomenal radio/video today.
Shakes not going to be happy with you.
Oh, boy. Shakes is probably fuming right now at the edge of his couch listening to this.
Well, you're assuming Shakes is awake. He might have gotten a slip of that.
I tried to do it because all offseason, Shakes, all the linebackers, we don't have this, how come we don't do that? And then Charlie, the lineman,
Yeah, give it to Charlie, JC. We prefer to Charlie. We prefer to get on him.
I'm calling him out because I want him to call in the show and give our team some praise because we've been doing very good. Our defense wasn't, didn't start off all that great, but you know what? Those first two games, they put us in a position to win. It was up to our offense, to close out those games. You know what I mean? Wouldn't you guys agree?
Hey, right now the Giants are 26th in the league in terms of total yards allowed per game. You obviously want that to get better, but I think we've seen some progress the last 2 weeks in terms of the defense. So I think that's a good thing. In terms of points allowed per game, believe it or not, the Giants are actually, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They are 10th in the league allowing just over 20 points per game. So I think heading into the season, if I told you this Giants defense would allow only 20.5 points per game, I think everybody would have signed up for that.
Yeah. So, I just wanted to call him out. And then there's two more things here.
Yeah.
Last week, a lot of people were still tweeting about James Jones. Oh, my God. I'm so over James Jones. You know what? About 2 weeks ago, I read an article that James Jones – he mentioned that he actually wanted to be cut. So for those people that are still talking about James Jones, I don't know if that's true, but there's a possibility that he knew he might have been going back to Green Bay and maybe he didn't want to be on the team, but he's not a slot receiver. I mean, he can do it, but he's more of an outside threat. So I think maybe that one of the main reasons why we didn't keep him is because we needed somebody in the slot. And then the two other things here, the tight end.
He's adding things. Finish up, JC. Finish up.
Move quick, I promise you.
That's okay.
The tight end, is there a possibility that we might, look for someone else or
– let me put it this way. I don't know what the Giants are doing in terms of tryouts today, but when you have that many tight ends go down, you put a player on IR like that, the logical thing you do is look on the outside, see if you can add somebody. Again, I'm not saying this guy's going to come and even be on the active roster necessarily, but it will be a guy that at least will get added onto the practice squad to add a little more depth on the roster.
Okay, and my last point, our red zone. I see a lot of plays where we're just going up the middle. We have a Vereen. Is there any trick plays, you know, like maybe a pitch, a toss to the side, put Vereen in there? He can run to the outside. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, we got to do something creative when we're in the red zone, man. It can't just be all up the middle all the time. When we have Vereen, you know, we could do like a little toss bat, a toss to the side, have him run to the, you know, to the edge. Maybe something with Beckham. I mean, I just think we got to utilize Vereen a little bit more, and I'll take that off the air.
Thanks, JC. Hi, JC. Appreciate the call, man. Thanks for being part of the show. Look, I don't think you're going to use any quote-unquote trick plays by meaning, you know, reverses, you know, running back receiver option passes or things like that. You know, Tom Coughlin's head might explode. Nobody wants to see that. So I don't think you can do that. But, yeah, I mean, I think you could do some outside runs. You can pitch the ball outside, run a, you know, zone outside, a zone play or something like that. But I don't think you necessarily have to use Vereen to do that either. You can get Williams and Jennings outside on a pitch play on the goal line and let them use their power and speed to get in. I mean, to me, Vereen's not best suited to be a guy to take on contact to get into the end zone. Because Lance, very rarely inside the five or inside the three, wherever you're going to run the ball from, are you going to have a no-contact touchdown. You're going to have to break through and power through a player or two to try to get there. And Vereen will make you miss, but he's not going to power through guys in that short area.
Well, the defense is in much closer proximity. So clearly you're not working with nearly as much space, John, as you mentioned. I think that all of the backs are versatile enough that you can certainly maximize their potential when you get in the red zone. I agree with JC. The numbers reflect that. I mean, the red zone numbers don't jump off the page in terms of the Giants' efficiency this season.
And they were great last year, too.
Yeah, and they were top 10 last year. They were 8th overall last year. Right now they're 31st. They're 4 of 13. They were 1 for 2 on Sunday. Dwayne Harris had the touchdown in the red zone, so they did make progress from that standpoint. But I think mentioning Harris, it goes beyond just the running backs. JC was talking about Shane Vereen, John, but, you know, I mean, I think everybody has the potential to be utilized in the red zone. The tight ends, Dwayne Harris, Reuben Randall. And it doesn't just have to be your number one weapon in Odell Beckham. I mean, certainly you want to spread things out so that the defense now has to account for multiple people when the Giants are down within the 20, not just one entity of this offense. So the more and more you see Harris make plays, the more and more you see Randall make plays, I think that should hopefully open up the offense once they get down inside that 20 range.
201-939-4513. I have a couple tweets we'll get to. One quick question from Jorge Cano. When will Beattie come back? Any timetable? Well, right now he can't come off the PUP list till after the first 6 weeks of the season are through. So you're looking at week 7, Jorge, before he can even get back onto the practice field. So it won't be before that. How quickly after those 6 weeks, I think it remains to be seen. Tom Coughlin hasn't really given an update on him, but I think the Giants hope for the end of October / beginning of November. That would be the earliest possible time Beattie will get back. As we get closer, I think we'll get a better idea of exactly where he is in that rehab process. Let's go to Abdul, Minnesota, on line one. Abdul, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Just a couple of things.
Sure.
I called in yesterday, and I didn't finish my thoughts. The one thing I also I'm pretty impressed with is that each week we're getting better. You know, after Dallas game, we got better in Atlanta. After Atlanta, we got better. And I see we're on an upward curve right now.
Agreed.
That makes me nervous because this team historically doesn't do well when we get better. You know what I mean? We always do better when we're fighting our backs against the wall. I just hope that we don't read our own press and start getting complacent.
Abdul, you have to. But Abdul, in order to succeed, you have to improve and win games. So you have to be able to.
And
now you're right.
But anyway, listen. Okay, I'll try to cut the negative. I'm saying each week I'm seeing we're on an upward trajectory, and I'm really, really impressed about that. Especially when you think, you know, Bobby Hart's getting better, Flowers is getting better, Beattie's coming back. Mm-hmm. You know, we're, as I said, you know, we're building some really positive momentum, and I'm really excited about that.
I agree.
And one other thing, I know looking back here, how is Rex Ryan still a coach? You know, it seems like, you know, all his teams are just completely undisciplined. They make the same mistakes over again. He gets no good quarterback. It just seems like
Whoa, 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 whoa. Tyrod
Taylor's a good quarterback.
Abdul, first of all, you can't blame the head coach for not having a quarterback. You know, Rex Ryan's not drafting players here. So the fact that Rex Ryan has a 500 record in the NFL and he hasn't had a very good quarterback, at least in his time with the Jets, I think tells you that he does do a pretty good job because he's done it despite the fact he hasn't had a franchise-type quarterback.
Okay, and my last I think someone just mentioned it. I am extremely impressed about Casillas and J.T. Thomas. I was one of those guys, and I must admit, I completely gave Reese a lot of grief about getting those two guys. I called them, you know, supposed to team players. They, you know, I'm wasting money, and they have completely opened my eyes up. They're hustling to the balls. Especially Casillas, you know, he made some nice tackles last game after.
One of the backs.
Yeah, he came in for Kennard. Yeah.
Yeah, he came in and made some plays, and he's just not a special teams player. So I have to give Reese credit. You know, I gave him crap about Newsome. I gave him crap about J.T. Thomas and Casillas. And all three of those players have proven me wrong. So I'm happy to say that. So with that.
Well, thank those you, two players in particular, I would agree with you. And thanks so much for the phone call, Abdul, in terms of weighing in on those linebackers. I mean, think about the play that J.T. Thomas made, John, with DRC on that goal line stand. Jonathan Casillas led the team in tackles on Sunday after Kennard went down. So, you know, guys are taking advantage of their opportunities. And one of the other reasons, John, why I think, you know, this defense has also slowly started to come together, if you notice the snap distribution, you know, Spags is rotating personnel. And they're not necessarily playing one individual for each and every snap. Not that that's anything refreshing. I mean, Spags was known for rotating personnel, but I think they're doing a nice job mixing and matching players so that when you get to that fourth quarter, you know, this team is fresh, is healthy, is in good shape to make those game-changing type of plays, to force those turnovers, to make those stops compared to perhaps what we've seen in recent seasons.
Tweet from @base718. John, can you clarify why Buffalo did not have a safety call when there was a holding penalty in their end zone? That's because the holding penalty did not
outside.
Take place in the end zone.
Yeah.
The holding penalty, I believe, took place around the 1.5-yard
Correct.
Line. So even though the quarterback was in the end zone, the holding penalty itself took place at the 1 or the 2. So that's why that was not called a safety. Joe Banzola, someday Kaepernick will start to run. We have trouble with him running. He is not a pocket passer, excuse me. His coach is using him wrong. Well, on the year, Kaepernick does have almost 200 yards rushing, so he has run the football.
He's averaged nearly 6 yards per carry.
And that's about 50 yards per game. So he has run the football. It just hasn't been enough to get that 49er offense going.
Well, the problem is, though, John, I think he's been effective on the ground based on those numbers, but if you're not throwing the football effectively, then teams are going to have a better read on how to contain you, or they'll say to themselves, you know what, Cap, you can have your 5 yards here or there because we know you're no threat to throw down the field. So that's the problem. Kaepernick was effective in prior seasons because they were just as impressive in throwing it down the field and running the football. It was a balanced attack. This year, it's Kaepernick running around, and you're not getting the same type of production from some of those other pieces.
Let's go to line 2. Jay in Washington, D.C. was with us. We lost him, then we got him back. Jay, what's up?
Hey, John. Hey, Lance. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey,
guys.
Jay.
Not a problem, Jay. How you doing, Jay?
Hey, I'm great. You know, I just wanted to reach back and talk about the Bills game. I just wanted to say how happy I was that our offense really took control of the game, in my opinion. As stout as Buffalo defense is, it was good to see us move the ball.
Hey, you know, Jay, you know, and I think the thing about it that you have to give the Giants credit for, I think a few things. One, they ran the ball much better than I thought they would against a very good Bills front. I thought the Giants would have all sorts of issues running the football. They ran it really well, which put them in manageable third downs, which then limited what the Bills could do. Number two, I thought Eli Manning did a phenomenal job winning the mental battle at the line of scrimmage pre-snap with the Bills. I think he made great adjustments pre-snap to get the Giants into plays that were going to work. And I also loved the game plan, where you basically ran no huddle the entire game. You got out there. You made the Bills commit to what they wanted to do defensively and show their hand early. And then there was so much time left in the play clock, Eli had time to react to what the Bills showed him, and then he got the Giants into a better play. So to me, those are the three things that really impressed me about the Giants' offense. To put it all together, they only turned the ball over once, and it was at the end of the game in the fourth quarter when the game was all but over. It was a 2-score game with under 4 minutes to go. So put all those things together, I think the offense did a very good job against a very tough defense.
I agree with you, John. You know, honestly, and I think a lot of Giants fans can attest to this, is that I really feel Eli Manning has got much better with actually handling the game clock. You know, a lot of fans, we watch the game, and he's so smart. He's one of the smartest quarterbacks in the NFL by far, period. You can say what you want. But he has a tendency to overthink things, and the game clock gets down to 3 seconds, 2 seconds, and sometimes we have to call a timeout unnecessarily, you know. But I'm just really glad to see Eli getting the play clock off and getting the ball snapped. What I wanted to say, though, is about Larry Donnell. Honestly, John, honestly, Lance, I'm sorry. You guys can chew me up, but I really think this guy is another project, another accident that's really waiting to happen. I mean, he's clutching the ball. I mean, honestly, I feel like I got to hold my breath every time he catches a reception. You know, I'm not sure if he's going to flip upside down or do some type of gymnastic acrobatic flip, you know. But
hey, look,
I
Jay,
mean, I'm
Jay,
just...
you know what? And based off his performance, his last 12 or 16 regular season games, I'll say 12 because he played good the first seven or games last year.
I mean,
year.
He hasn't caught a touchdown. He caught 3 touchdowns in the Redskin game, and honestly, he's been a ghost since.
No,
you know?
Jay, it's fair. It's fair.
And the thing about it is like, you know, okay, I, you know, want to give Jerry Reese credit as well, but, you know, for somebody like Adrian Robertson, who had this promise of being a JPP of tight ends, and you held on to him for 3-4 years, and now he's not even on our team anymore, I think this kind of thing is going to happen with Donnell. I like Will Ty. I like Daniel Fells, who I think should be starting. I know he's hurt, though, but I'm just saying, and I like Jerome Cunningham. But
yeah,
I
but
hope
Jay,
we get Victor Cruz back, though.
Yeah, but Jay, here's the difference with Donnell. Unlike Adrian Robinson, who you brought up, Donnell showed he could do it. He showed he could be a real, legitimate, useful weapon in the passing game for half a season last year, and he did real damage against some good teams and showed what he could do. So I don't think you're going to put him in the same category as the other guys because he's done it, and if he can just – be consistent and avoid the mistakes that you're talking about. He has the physical ability to do it, but he can't drop the passes you're talking about, and he can't fumble the football like he did last season. If he fixes those two things, he's fine.
I mean, that's a big if, though, John. Like, I'll let you guys finish, but that's a big if, and I hope that he can do that. But in 2009, we drafted this rookie wide receiver by the name of Hakeem Nicks, and we did not let him play until a whole, you know, kind of 4 or 5 games into the season. And the Giants fans were saying, let's put him in, let's put him in. And I think it's the opposite with Larry Donnell. It's like, let's take him out, let's take him out. But he's a great player. I like his athleticism. Thanks for taking my call.
No, Jay, I appreciate the call. Thanks a lot. Look, I understand being disappointed in what Donnell's given you the last 10 or so games he's played in. He's had some problems. He's made some mistakes. He had some big drops. And the flipping, believe me, I will tell you one thing that I probably won't comfort Giant fans, Lance, but I know is true. His flipping drives Coach Coughlin even more nuts than it does Giant fans. He told them many times, and he's said this publicly to the media, that he's told Larry Donnell many times, stay on your feet. It's something he has to fix.
Yeah. Well, it goes back to what you were referring to, John, the consistency. And we've been saying that time and time again. You know, Larry Donnell is capable of flashing, but you don't want just the flashing game here and there. You want consistency, and that's what he's trying to showcase. You know, the last caller brought up the fact that he had that big game against the Washington Redskins and then the numbers weren't as consistent. You know, part of that was defenses all of a sudden realized who Larry Donnell was. And this goes back to the consistency factor. So defenses now know who you are. They're going to put a little bit more pressure on you. They're going to be a little bit more physical with you at the line of scrimmage. Now you have to meet them halfway. You have to make the adjustments. So, you know, there's still a small sample size for Larry Donnell. Let's not forget about that. You know, he's not a seasoned veteran who's been in this league for 5 or 6 years. I think that's important to note. But within his small sample size, there certainly have been some flashes and there have been some inconsistencies. So right now, he's just trying to put together a stretch where you could say, hey, when Larry Donnell's on the field, this is what you're going to get out of him. Because I saw, for example, John, against the Cowboys, and I referenced this before, on that big Rashad Jennings run when the Giants were marching down the field, you know, before they settled for the field goal, he laid a few nice blocks out so that Jennings could get up right in the middle of the offensive line and pick up about 20-some-odd yards. And we've seen Larry Donnell make catches. At the same time, we've also seen what John referred to. He leaves his feet. He drops the ball on a key third down. So you got to put all of that together so that you can eliminate some of those mishaps that could unfortunately come back to bite you.
Absolutely. And one other thing that I thought Jay mentioned that I thought was interesting, and Giant fans, and we've gotten these calls many times, why does he let the clock all the way go down to zero? Why does he do this? Why does he do that? Well, he uses that time to judge what's going on in terms of the defense. And if you remember back in week one, what was the Cowboys doing, the offense doing every time they had the ball against the Giants? That play clock was down 2 seconds, 1 second, clicking down to zero before Tony Romo snapped the football, because he's doing exactly the same thing Eli Manning's trying to do. Figure out what the defense is doing and then putting his offense in the best position in order to get a good playoff. So, look, you never want to have a delay game. You don't want to waste time out. That's all true. But it's not like they're wasting the time. Now, when you get out of the huddle slowly or you get to the line slowly, that's a different argument. But when he's at the line making those adjustments, trust me, he's doing those things for a purpose.
No, it's a game of chess, and we've seen it time and time again with most of these veteran quarterbacks. And there are some times where things, John, develop very late in the play clock by the defense I'm talking about, not the offense. So, you know, Eli Manning is making changes here or there. You know, clearly there were a lot of penalties in this last contest, 11 penalties, 8 on the offense. There were 3 delay of game penalties. You know, those are the types of things you certainly want to eliminate. But I would agree with you. I don't think it's because there's disorganization on offense, John, and they're just all of a sudden taking their sweet time getting up to the line. I think it's more of that cat and mouse game with the defense, and sometimes you see things at the last minute, and instead of losing yardage, you know, you just want to make sure everybody's on the same page.
Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to claim your free entry today. Joe in Pennsylvania is up next. Joe, what's going on?
Hey, hi, guys. Let's see. First, I want to compliment that the Giants really, in every key position, they do have young guys in the defensive backfield, the front, their first and second year guys. The linebackers, you know what I mean, the offensive line. And I really think that bowls and going ahead for the future and with these games, with this experience and that.
Joe,
really,
Joe, pay your phone bill? What happened here?
Yeah, Joe, do me a favor. Your line sounds terrible, so make your point, make it real fast, and then we'll respond to it. You have to be quick because your phone line sounds terrible.
I just wanted to compliment there on that. Do you think there's any chance they would bring Robinson back? And what's the status of Cunningham?
Cunningham, they're trying to work back. And, Joe, thanks a lot for the call. They're trying to work him back from that injury. We'll know more on Wednesday when the Giants try and practice. They didn't work on Monday outside, so we don't have a good feel for where he is physically, so we're not sure yet. Look, I'm sure the Giants look at all their options at tight end. Obviously, a guy like Robinson, you mentioned, has been here in camp, so he knows the system. That might give him a bit of a leg up, give him a chance to step in and do something quickly. But I don't know. We'll see.
Well, they've brought back players before who have been with the team at other positions, so that would not surprise me. I mean, obviously, they want to get the guys who have made the team back to full health, but unfortunately, you know, the injuries have started to stockpile at this one position at tight end. That's why I think it's important to perhaps utilize a Bobby Hart in the meantime.
And they've been doing that.
Get a bigger offensive lineman out there to help with the blocking. I mean, that certainly can offset the injuries at tight end.
We've seen Dallas Reynolds out there. We've seen Jeff Schwartz out there. So they've used a cavalcade of different guys at that extra offensive line spot. Rick in Tampa. Rick's up next. Rick, how are you, pal?
Guys, how you doing?
Doing well, Rick.
Doing well, Rick.
Yeah, like with all the conversation, I could talk a million things after hearing a couple other callers. You know, I live in Tampa now, but I lived for 18 years in Buffalo. And went to many games there, knew Jim Kelly and all the guys when they were playing. You know, a tough place to play. So I want to definitely give kudos for how the Giants could go into that stadium and play that well against a team that was so, you know, supposed to be so great defensively.
And Rick, it was loud there too, by the way. It was really loud in that building. It was not quiet.
It's loud. It's like Seattle. It is. It's that 12th man craziness, especially back in the day. They're crazy now with Rex Ryan up there, so I think their crowd was crazy. But for them to go into that, you know, that first point really is amazing that they were able to go in and really control the whole game. But we almost got ourselves out of the way completely, except for that last call of the pass. And despite what some commentators may say was a go for the jugular, they didn't need to throw it. Almost cost them, but it didn't. So let's hopefully that's the final little glitch that is in our own getting out of our way. But other than that, the game was a big win. You know what I wanted to say real quick, though, is turnovers, first of all, defensive turnovers. Do we have more this year in the first four games that we've had in a long time, or am I not? Because we seem to have so many turnovers, a good defensive turnover.
Well, they do have a lot of takeaways thus far on the season. Takeaways. I'll try to bring up the charts here from last season to compare.
I have the one for this year. The Giants, in terms of takeaways this year, they have 5 interceptions and 3 fumbled recoveries for 8 takeaways. So that's an average of 2 per game. It's a good question. Let me see if
I'll tell you right now. Through the first 4 games last season, they actually had 1 more. They had 9 because, remember, they had 6 takeaways against the Redskins in Week 4. That was that big lopsided Thursday night game.
But last year overall, they finished the season with just 26. So right now they are on a pace to outpace last season's 26 takeaway total. Wow. And how many did they have? You said 9 through 4 weeks?
They had 9, but
that means through the final 12 weeks, they only had 17.
The numbers dropped off, and to piggyback off of what Rick was just saying, you know, the takeaways, Rick, have been consistent through the first 4 games.
Yeah.
Last season, you had no takeaways in the first 2 contests combined. Then you had 9 in games 3 and 4.
Right.
So, you know, that helped offset some of the numbers after a slow start.
And just FYI, the team that led the league in takeaways last year, Rick, had 34. So right now the Giants are basically on pace to being one of the best takeaway teams in the league. So, so far, so good.
Yeah. That's good. And when Prince was just on FAN, and he was saying that Spags has been teaching the aggressiveness of the point of attack, and I think that's been a big plus. So I'm excited about that part of the game. And the other thing, 2 things real quick. One was that notice 2 wins, Beeson's back, and I think you cannot take for granted how much importance he gives the defense, that him being there for the these last 2 games. And his control over the defense has just been great. And the other thing is with Cruz, you know, I San Francisco, I don't want to take him lightly. I know everybody could say let's not look past his game, but if Cruz, when we get him back, just think of that extra pressure the teams will have to cover Beckham and Cruz at the same time. It's so much exciting to can't wait for it. So whether he doesn't come back this week, maybe they could just say, hey, you know what, let's wait one more week because San Francisco's coming to town. We could beat them with Dwayne Harris as we did against Buffalo and then shoot for the big game against Philadelphia to have Cruz come back. Does that sound like a plan for them, or is Cruz still up in the air like whenever he'll be back?
I think Victor Cruz will play as soon as Victor Cruz is physically ready to play. Whether that's – just an opinion. I'd be surprised if that's this week against the 49ers. You know, you have a re-aggravation like that to come back the week afterwards. I'd be very surprised if he'd be ready. And remember, Victor said last week after the injury, we're taking this slow. We're not messing around here. I don't want another relapse. So I would be shocked if you saw him on the field on Sunday this week, though we'll know a lot more tomorrow when Tom Coughlin talks to the media and addresses what happens at practice. You know, for Philly, you love to get him back for the divisional matchup. I mean, heck, you love him on the field for that game and the Dallas game, but they're not going to put him out there, Rick, until he is ready to play.
And, Rick, the other thing that I'll throw out there to add to what John just said, remember, you have another example on your team this year in Nat Burhe with what happened with the re-aggravation of a calf. So,
multiple times.
You know, they're going to take that into consideration, what happened with Burhe, so they can avoid that with Victor Cruz. I think it's really premature to pencil in a specific date for Victor Cruz. The other thing is, keep in mind, remember, the goal was to get him out there for Buffalo, Rick, and then all of a sudden Wednesday's practice comes along and the setback. So not only do you have to wait to see what happens at practice, you need to have to wait and see what happens the consecutive days at practice. When I'm talking about a Wednesday, a Thursday, and a Friday before then I think he gets the green light to get ready to suit up for a contest.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I'm just looking forward to it because I think that'll just be that push that we need to just set the world on fire with the offense. And you know what? I'll let you guys go. I know you have other callers. But this tight end stuff, and I have to laugh, our tight end situation has been so unpredictable and stuff. Bennett, who went to Chicago, whatever happened? I mean, he turned into seems like a decent tight end for Chicago. What happened? Why didn't we keep him? Was there something that we didn't like about him?
No,
he got a lot of money.
The Bears offered him a $20-plus million contract with a lot of money guaranteed. At that point, the Giants were pretty strapped salary cap-wise. They didn't have that much money to allocate to a tight end, and I think that's pretty much why he went on to Chicago. And look, and good for Martellus. He was a good guy when he was here, very affable, and he's done a good job in Chicago. But you know what? The Giants would love to sign a lot of really good players that are out there, but there is a salary cap, and you can only operate under those rules.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, hey, listen. Let's go. Giants this week and take care of business. I think that is the main thing. Go to 3-2, and gosh, what a way the season has turned around.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, Rick, appreciate the call.
All right, we got 10 minutes. We got three calls. Let's get them all in. Bill in Phoenix first. Bill, what's going on, pal?
Hi, guys. I really enjoy your show.
Thanks for listening.
I'm really happy with the way the Giants played last week, and they did good. But I just have this one play with that interception with Reuben Randle. Do you guys think he fought hard enough for the ball?
Honestly, I just thought that was a really good play by the defensive back. It reminded me a lot of the Malcolm Butler play in the Super Bowl, where they sat on the route. There was no pick on this particular play, but the cornerback read the slant. He sat back on it. He beat Randle to the spot. Randle was going for the ball, but the defensive back got his shoulder across Randall's shoulder. Yeah. And at that point, I didn't think there was much that Reuben Randle could do. I thought, one, it was a great play by the defense. Two, Eli could have read him sitting on that route. And if you want to blame a third guy, I guess it's Randle. But to me, he's third on that list out of the three culprits in that particular spot.
Okay, and I got another question. Should have Randle been coached up? Because when I watched the play, that same play, I saw the defensive back come up and sort of arm bar Randle, put his arm in front of Randle, so Randle running the slant can't go across the guy's face.
Yeah.
With the down in the situation, what is the downside of Randle at that point knowing he can't go across the guy's face committing pass interference?
Well, if you're within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, those guys can push, shove, hand fight, and do whatever they want.
But it was outside. I thought it was outside the 5 yards. So if he committed pass interference or even a personal foul, the worst downside is that they probably kick a 15-yard longer field goal. Is that correct?
You're talking about if Randle takes an offensive pass interference call? Is that what you're referring to, Bill?
You're basically saying Randle basically tackles the defensive back, doesn't let him get the interception.
Yeah, so you back yourself up. You were at that point, it was third and goal from the 8.
Right.
Just to put things in perspective. So it's still a manageable field goal, Bill, to answer your question.
No, Bill, you're right. Hey, look, you never want to have the other team intercept the football, so you much rather commit the offensive interference penalty. But, frankly, Randall's looking back at the ball. I'm not even sure he sees the defensive back breaking on the football. He's trying to focus on the football in the air. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying he saw the defensive back, but he should have known that the defensive back had his arm in front of Randle, so Randle can't go across. He sort of arm-barred him. Is what I'm saying. When I watched the play, that's what I saw anyway.
Well, and
all right, Bill, thanks for the call, pal. We got to run.
Appreciate the phone call, Bill. Tom Coughlin actually addressed this during the conference call yesterday, and he said, looking back at the play, you know, Stephon Gilmore made a great play, so you have to tip your cap to the Bills' corner. And at the same time, from having discussions with Reuben Randle, he said Randle will be the first one to tell you he could have done a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And same thing with Eli Manning in terms of the read. So, you know, I think you can point to many different facets of that one play, John, but Stephon Gilmore, to me, made a tremendous athletic play, and sometimes you just have to say, you know what, hey, the defense got the better of the offense.
And a smart play. They had used that slant on the Bills a couple different times. He read it. He was there. He beat Randle to the spot. Nugs in Minnesota. Nugs, you're up next, pal. Long time no speak, bud.
Hey, what's going on, man?
How are you, Nugs?
Yeah, I just want to tell the Giants fans, just lay off. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we're 2-2. Let's just buy our team a beer, you know what I mean? I saw Larry Donnell do what Giants fans have been saying that he doesn't do at all, and that was block. He was sealing off that backside. I was like, oh, look at Donnell. Looks like he got about 10, 20 pounds worth of weights in his shorts right now. You know what I'm saying? Laying some good blocks on the backside.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to say is we should beat San Francisco. But one thing scares me about San Francisco right now, they're wounded, and Vernon Davis hasn't really been that effective this year. And I just saw us give up like 100 and something yards to Charles Clay. And I'm looking at that San Francisco offense like if there's one person on that offense that's going to get it sparked up, it's going to be Vernon Davis. I think we can handle Carlos Hyde because we've handled back-to-back number one running teams. So I think we can keep Hyde in check, but I'm really scared about Vernon Davis.
Now, on the bright side, though, on the bright side, Nuggs, Vernon Davis hasn't really done a whole much the last 2 or 3 years. He's not the player he was 4 or 5 years ago. So, you know, him and Kaepernick, to me, never really got on the same page. Vernon Davis' best days were with Alex Smith when he was the quarterback of the 49ers. So, Lance, to me, and he's hurt, by the way. We're not sure if he's going to play on
Sunday. He's got the bone contusion. So, right, his status is up in the air. So, Nuggs, we got to wait and see. Depending on how much he practices this week, even if he's going to suit up. I would agree with you. I think tight ends have been productive against the Giants, but I do say that there is a significant drop-off when you're talking about the upside that Vernon Davis brings to the table, Nuggs, compared to what, let's say, Vance McDonald brings to the table or Garrett Celek. So, I mean, I think that the Giants have a good matchup with all of these tight ends, especially if Vernon Davis is banged up. It's nowhere near the Charles Clays of the world, the Jason Wittens of the world, or even the Jacob Tammies of the world who had a productive game for Atlanta.
Exactly. And
one more thing,
I got a question for you guys.
Yep.
I was looking at the schedule and I was trying to match it up and I wasn't sure. Are we going to get that second game with Dallas without Tony Romo and Dez? Is that the way that's working out? Because
Romo for sure. Romo will be out for sure. I mean, the Cowboys seem to indicate that there's a chance Dez could be back for that game. I, for one, would be surprised by that. Those broken foots can be very iffy, Nuggs. And thanks a lot for the call, pal. We appreciate it. My guess is that no Dez and no Romo. Now, whether it's Brandon Whedon or Matt Castle, we'll see. If Whedon plays poorly against the Patriots this week, the Cowboys have a bye week. Wouldn't be shocked if they decide to move Castle into the spot. Now, Whedon hasn't played that poorly to me. He has been the least of their issues. The defense has been a problem. The receivers aren't getting open. But when you lose 3-4 games in a row, you trade a fifth-round pick for a quarterback. Who knows what they're going to do?
Well, one way or another, this is going to be a different-looking Cowboys team.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're going to get new players on defense. Greg Hardy, Rolando McClain are going to return from suspension. They didn't play in the first game.
Yep.
Like you said, there's going to be a new quarterback other than Tony Romo. Who it is remains to be seen. And, you know, they also brought in some new receivers since they last played the Giants, too. Nowhere near Dez Bryant. But I think the best takeaway is it's going to be a different-looking team than what we saw in week number one.
By the way, the Cowboys coaches don't seem enamored with Joseph Randall and his leading the ball over the end zone with one hand either. He got benched for a few plays in that game, and maybe Christian Michael might become a bigger part of the offense, but Darren McFadden certainly hasn't really showed much so far.
Well, he stayed healthy through 4 games. That's an accomplishment.
And a great point, too. No Lance Dunbar. He tore his ACL. He was a big factor for the Cowboys. Great point on that as well. All right, two more calls. Let's get to it. Joe in New York. Joe, what's up?
Hey, how you guys doing? I just want to give Tom Coughlin the love and the props he deserves, man, because he's got all these guys playing and believing. Even when they lost those first 2 games, they still were playing with a lot of fire, a lot of passion. And when you hear them talk to the media, you can hear him and everything he's been saying to them. You can hear that coming out in them. I just want to give him props and the love, man. He deserves everything. So to Tom Coughlin, he deserves that.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it, my friend. Good stuff. And look, here's the thing. And a lot of people have complained about some of the time management stuff at the end of the games. But if it wasn't for Tom and his staff getting this team ready to play and game playing the way they do, the Giants would have been in the position to be close at the end of these games to have those types of, you know, close game, you know, issues that maybe they've had in a couple of the games earlier in the year where they had some problems there. But they've done a great job coaching these guys up, having them ready to play. I thought it was pretty obvious that all those schemes that the Bills put out there that can confuse people, the Giants were ready for them. I thought they were very well prepared for what the Bills did on offense in that first half. They really didn't do anything on the offensive side of the ball. I think this Giants team this year has been very well coached.
Well, between the takeaways that they've had on defense, John, and their ability to stop the run, I mean, those are
and protecting
two,
the football on offense, by
absolutely.
The way.
Absolutely.
Giveaways.
And the way the offensive line has performed, too. Let's not forget about that.
And I think they've designed the offense well to not put that offensive line in a position where they have to protect for 4 or 5 seconds.
Well, Eli Manning's been getting rid of the football quicker.
Absolutely.
They haven't been pressing the envelope down the field. I think that'll open up as they get more receivers healthy and so forth. But you're right. The decision-making shows up in terms of the stats and also with respect to the eye test.
How about splitting the time with the running backs? They've gotten a lot out of all three guys. They've balanced those running backs very well.
You keep guys fresh that way on offense and defense.
I mean, Yuvani Unga was your starting middle linebacker for 2 games. The guy's a 27-year-old rookie that never had an NFL snap. And you're giving up 20 points per game. That's pretty darn good. I mean, give Steve Spagnuolo, Ben McAdoo, and Tom Coughlin a lot of credit. Big Ant's in Maryland. Big Ant, you got about a minute. You're going to wrap up our show. What's up, big man?
All the ways they need to be wrapped up. What's up, John?
What's up, dude? How you doing, man?
Ah,
Big Ed. This is Big Ed. Why are you changing your name here?
Big Ed. What's going on, Big Ed?
I didn't change my name. Nemus didn't tell y'all.
That's all good, baby. Don't worry about it, brother. How are you, man?
How we doing?
I'm great, man. I'm doing great, man. My boy, he's going to be 18 months. He's walking. He's starting to talk. And
nice. That's great.
Congratulations.
Twins, number five and everything.
That's great.
Guys, I tell you, we have ourselves a championship team if I've ever seen one. It is all the makings of it. Everybody would agree. I can pretty much see clear as day. We got a championship run here. All we got to do is keep everybody healthy, and I don't see no one beating us. Only way we would lose a game if we beat ourselves.
All right, Big Ed.
That's really all I have, man. I really do, man.
I will let you have the last word.
I'll be at a game soon. I'm trying to get to this 49. No, not 49 a game. The Dallas game. That's my key game.
Hopefully we'll see you up here, big man.
All right, Big Ed.
Yeah.
Thank you, bud.
Man, you guys take care, man.
You too, as well. Absolutely.
Take his time. and we're going to be all right. Like I said, he's not going to come back till after the bye week. Then he should be 100% healthy to run, to make the final run. It's strategy now. That's it. That's all we got.
Thanks, Big Ed.
Love y'all, man.
Appreciate it, Big Ed.
Good stuff. Appreciate the call.
And I will let Big Ed have the final word on his always super positive take.
Yes.
Don't forget, fans, Big Blue Kickoff is brought to you by DraftKings. If you never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to claim your free entry today. Thiel stunk last week. I'm going to get right to the point here. He was terrible. he spent all his money on Aaron Rodgers, had his worst game of the year, 200 yards and a touchdown. Terrible pick. Larry Fitzgerald, who's been great this year,
quiet.
No touchdowns this week, 100 yards. I'm going to poo-poo that pick. To quote the great Shakes.
Oh, boy.
By the way, Shakes is very happy somebody mentioned him today on Twitter. He didn't hear it, but somebody told him he got mentioned. He's like, my mom will be proud. I'm famous.
Oh, look at that. Yeah, but I'm kind of disappointed that Shakes didn't call in.
Or Charlie.
Yeah, well, Charlie, too. Notice how, I'm not on Shakes for that. Charlie scares away all of a sudden when somebody, threatens him.
And by the way, as poor as job those two guys did, Latavius Murray was even worse. He was Fiegel's sleeper pick this week.
And he slept. 50
yard rushing yards, 8 points. He was asleep.
There we go.
He was terrible. So that's what happened for Fiegel's DraftKings lineup. To draft your own lineup, and I'm sure it'll be better than Fiegel's. Go to DraftKings.com and enter promo code New York to claim your free entry today. Hopefully next week, Fiegel's will finally go 3 for 3. I wouldn't hold your breath. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. Tomorrow, it's Marks and David Deal. It's the Tino and Cross on Thursday. Have a great day on Giants.com. Thanks, everybody.
Have a good one.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.